The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Larissa Biggers for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is poetry. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you From Quiet Men and Their Coyotes by Mark McAllister. Mark McAllister grew up in northern Illinois, made frequent and formative trips to his grandparents' dairy farm in Wisconsin and the Driftless region, and learned to write at Oberlin College. He lives in Pittsboro, North Carolina, and continues to travel often in the Driftless area, as well as in Wisconsin's Northwoods and Michigan's Upper Peninsula. For over 35 years, Mark's professional career has focused on his conservation of wildlands and wildlife. He's also an active member of his community's emergency response team, a board member of a Red Wolf conservation organization in northeastern North Carolina, and a board member of the Driftless Writing Center, a Wisconsin-based writers cooperative. The first poem I'll read by Mark McAllister is called About the Poet. About the Poet. Please include a brief autobiographical statement with your submission. Thanks for asking. Like you, 60% of my body is water. Raw milk makes up the rest, tinged blue and still steaming when brought in from the barn. I believe there are three types of rain. One barely breaks through the canopy. Still, it sounds like a river on the rise. Another simply fails to arrive, even though the lightning. And the third is metal roof. Finally, you should know about the night I turned left from one gravel road onto another, how the headlights swept an unfenced pasture, two ghost white mules side by side and each hobbled, not a house or outbuilding in sight. The girl with the rain slicker and boots, though the sky was clear, her flashlight and the smell of pine trees recently cut. How it seemed that I would someday want to recall this, but only when someone asked me to. The second poem is called Light Sleeper. Light Sleeper. Require that your words behave when placed beside each other. Feel free to drop blue Ford next to pickup, for example, but hold rusty or ancient for another poem. Get straight to your beliefs about snow. Use owl and mouse, but do not offer any details about owls or mice. Decide where you stand when it comes to the body. Be ready when the right word smiles down upon you. Then, and only then, tell me about your truck, that ragged hole worn through the floor mat at the very spot where your clutch side boot heel rest, about the doe and the wind face drift that builds around her while she sleeps. Tell me that a woman you know wears between her breast a long, bright scar instead of jewelry. Tell me how your dad taught you how to solder to gap spark plugs and double clutch a stick. Tell me that you are a light sleeper, that you know the sound of an owl when it takes a mouse in the woods just outside your window, how though it is muffled by the snow, it is enough to wake you. The next poem is What Became Clear Today. What Became Clear Today, Birkhead Wilderness Area 20, February 2021. Though I can no more resist a creek than a creek can resist a river, my crossings have become clumsy. The water is higher, stepstones farther apart and slicker than ever. When I am rushed, my cursive is often mistaken for my father's. Most men would gladly trade their scars for mine. A grad student collects deer ticks. There are frogs in February's mountains. Something is wrong, there is no doubt. The two tenets of my invented religion, don't crawl under fallen trees because it is dangerous. Don't climb over them, that is impolite. Know what the weather plans. Make clear to the forest your intentions. Eat well, but save something for the squirrels. Cross at a bridge if you can. Finally, a line is right only when it rings twice, once in the ear and then again in the mouth. The next poem is called Running Over with Coins and Bills. Running over with coins and bills. How is it this farm wagon came to be? How is it this farm wagon came to be marooned alongside a less than traveled country road? Thick ditch grass waist deep, dry honed, sharp, and moving towards seed. How is it this farm wagon came to be broken, once red under skeleton and tongue sloughing rust, bald tires long gone flat, spiral springs stuffed with rodent's nest, deck boards the length of the wagon, parched out gray and splintered. How is it this farm wagon came to be laden with bushel baskets of carrots, beets and onions, peas and radishes and turnips, cardboard cartons of bush beans and tomatoes, antique glass bowls brimmed by cherries, apples and pears and six sorts of brambleberries? How is it this farm wagon came to be engraced by the dented pie plate running over with coins and bills, a laminated handwritten sign, honor system, take what you need, pay what you can, we are blessed and we are glad to share. The next poem is called Abandon. Abandon. The long, unused trailhead was exactly where promised, just past Hannah's Creek and marked by a tumbled cairn, the tread crossed by spider webs, and corkscrewed trees dropped by last year's storms. After three ridges, it flattened out. The creek doubled back on itself to form a small island, and because I remember camps the way other people do faces or birthdays, I knew this as a site I'd found more than half my life ago, mapless and with a woman I would discover possessed the planet's loveliest hip bones. I have since learned two senses of abandon. One notes the joy of being profoundly unburdened, how everything we required then simply came to us, as if on the backs of animals that rested while we bathed in the waist-deep water. The other is to allow a place to go unvisited, to eventually forget it was ever there. The next poem is called Ghost Ranch. Ghost Ranch, Box Canyon Trail, Abiquiu, New Mexico, December 2021. When you entered the canyon, between its open arms, it seemed much like a body. That the canyon exhaled, for instance, its breath cold as cliff shade and snowmelt, though the day was a warm one. Or that it was informed, as is your body, by black bear and coyote scat, glitter stones and fragile purple flowers. And finally, that you crossed and recrossed so many times the same narrow creek, that its root and yours came together helical. And what is that, if not a body? You drank at the canyon's terminus, at a rockfall from centuries ago. As you shouldered again into your pack, another body came forward. Ghost slid its hands up between your arms and ribs, pressed a cheek to your shoulder blades. You held both wrists and an X, bent forward so its weight left the ground. Only then did you remember the sharps of her hips. She breathed in your ear, "Careful, don't drop me." And through these many years, you have not. Next, I'll read 422 trees. 422 trees. I'm told there are 422 trees for each person on Earth. This one has been split and stacked for me by the 10th grader down the road. As it is rare to have a choice in anything, I examine each piece in the pile, choose two for the base and a third to draw the fire up. The thin, splintery twigs go in first, a slice of resin sticky as candy between them, smell of sap and flannel, then a flat, smooth one to be propped up by the skinnies. An origin flame waves from yellow to blue, and soon the fire feeds on itself. How much longer can I put this off? go out for another armload, always a last one before bedtime, always coatless for the chance to warm myself again, and then drop to the slate apron once more on my achy atheist knees. Next, I'll read Where We Went When We Went Places. Where We Went When We Went Places. What comes to our mind is our escape from heat wave Salt Lake City through eastern Idaho, by nightfall Montana, then 3 nights of freezing rain and glacier. While sleeping bags dripped in the back seat, we flipped an imaginary coin, decided to rush north and outrun the storm. Turned right onto the main drag. In Babb, a tiny border town confused by heavy traffic, the marching band in the rear view, we realized it was Babb's July 4th parade, and that the block-long line of classic cars, 57 Chevys and restored Mustangs, now included our Nissan Sentra. On to Alberta, over a frost-heaved Tulane. The guard in the bright red custom shack did not look away from his porcelain cup. Next, a deserted provincial road. We passed mile after mile of low, dusky bushes. Once pulled over, we discovered ourselves surrounded by wild prairie rose, Rosa arcansa, none of it intentional or tended. We took it all in with just married eyes, crushed the petals onto our clothes, the skin behind our ears, guessed that those were Calgary's lights in the sky ahead. The next poem is One's Face at Birth. One's Face at Birth. As she flowed into the midwife's hands, Manon was the expression of the front paddler in a canoe about to pitch over a waterfall, as if her entrance into the world was an ill-considered adventure that she still did not intend to miss. Whereas Cade arrived indignant at the injustice of being pulled rudely through a narrow incision into a brightly lit and very cold room, he looked like an angry bald man arrested for a crime he did not commit. Neither child has changed. My son's sense of fairness remains planet-sized, while his sister is the electric weather that surrounds that planet. Like most men of my era, my father was not present and my mother was in no position to notice my first face. I suspect it showed both weary resignation and the anticipation of things hypnotic, which makes sense as I was born just 3 days before the 50s became the 60s. So here I am this many years later. It is early in an interminable January, ash gray and rainy, hands in my pockets and the trudge up the driveway. I stop short and listen. The year's first barred owl. The next poem is called Not Pointless or Too Greedy. Not Pointless or Too Greedy. The sun out and the wind up enough to make the oaks shimmer. One barely dares to hope for days like this, a cold one so rare in April. You're on a roll now, so go ahead. Desire some other things while you can. Begin with what you know is impossible. For example, stop the bulldozers across the road. 25 years ago, there were just 3 houses, yours, the Thomases, the Carters, 6 adults and 5 kids all told among the 1,100 acres of forest. Now they are clearing a block of lots, as they did already to your north and your east. The 1,100 has dwindled to what, less than 100? Then, hope for something that happened once but will not again. Ask your dad for help with the truck. He'll take a beer from the garage fridge, join you under the hood. There's a trick to it, he likes to say. Turn the screw a hair, hit that with a hammer, again, and a little harder this time. Okay, try it. You reach to the driver window, twist the key until the big Ford turns over. He pulls the throttle back, full, and holds it there until the tools vibrate on the walls. Next, hope for something that you find before you need to look for it. Limit yourself to a humble object, an arrowhead half buried in the woodlot, a length of barbed wire absorbed into a tree. No big deal, but it reminds you that others chose to remain in this place, too. Now, for the end of the exercise, note the red shoulder hawks moving onto your land, the ones from across the way, the ones chased off by the bulldozers. Let them be what you desire. This is not at all pointless. This is not too late or too greedy. The trick is to decide that all you want are the red-brown feathers, the banded tails, the high circles, and the April sky. Again, this collection of poems is called Quiet Men and Their Coyotes, and now I'll read a poem by the same name, Quiet Men and Their Coyotes. Being curious, coyote will follow at a distance and for some miles, stop to drink at the creek long after you cross, trot to catch sight again. You both startle at the same wood grouse, bend to consider bear scat aside the trail. As expected, he often wanders ahead, but the grass is matted where he waited. Tonight, as your one log fire dims, reach deep into your belly and pull forth a whine that drops hard into a howl. String it out as long as you are able until the hair on your neck lies back down. Despite all your time together, this is the only sound you have offered him. Coyote cannot resist and chuckle barks in answer, then remembers to cut his voice short. You're surprised that he gave away his place. His heart breaks to learn you are as lonely as he is. The next poem is called Rainbow Wilderness. Rainbow Wilderness. The Rainbow Wilderness Loop is a commitment. 10 miles in, and only after you have noted piles of woods. Rainbow Wilderness. The Rainbow Wilderness Loop is a commitment. 10 miles in, and only after you have noted piles of wolf scat, flushed grouse, and Cross Nine Creeks, will you find yourself just short of halfway. As far from your truck as you will want to be, you are now in it for the long haul. A black bear browses in the frost-covered ferns. He moves like an old man and clears a table set for autumn's visit. The guests that arrive late, yet still departed early. When you walk into the bear's kitchen, he will gladly offer you a place, bring out the leftovers, and then sit while you eat. He fixes his blurry eyes on you and asks, "Do people believe you did enough for your dad? Whatever happened to that girl on the L train, the one who guessed it was your birthday, then kissed you just before her stop at Van Buren?" He watches you disappear down the trail and then gets back to his chores. With a headlamp and some luck, you should find your way home. The long and coldest months are coming soon. The next poem is called Deer Crossing. Deer Crossing. Our road is lined with yellow metal signs. Each reflects a lovely and leaping eight-pointer, a buck with a clear conscience. My daughter's first job was to help me watch for deer when we drove at night. She leaned forward in her booster seat, stared down the dark two-lane just recently paved and yellow-striped. Then she could spot them, a twitch in the shoulder weeds or grazing in the neighbor's butterfly garden. The only one she missed ended up on my windshield. A county crew usually landfills the roadkill, though over the years I have shoveled several fawns into the wheelbarrow when Manon wasn't looking. Those that can crawl into the woods on their own to avoid the bleed and burst on the hot asphalt. The vultures, as they arrive, are unnerved. When their wings tangle in the dense canopy, so they wait, hunch-shouldered, at the forest edge, then wrap their feathers like the darkest robes, proceed in funereal hops to the carcass, and all night take it apart as the cars hammer past, the children inside alert and lit softly as ghosts. Next, I'll read Coyote on Wisconsin Highway 63. Coyote on Wisconsin Highway 63. Song dog, tall-eared eater of everything. I slow the truck and give a wide berth so you can be safe in the other lane from where you gaze at an empty house. You have just now understood, indeed somehow know this is a luminous fact, that the woman who would have loved you lived there years ago. So many times you cross this highway, cross the pastures and dark forest edges, now reclaiming the house. You decided it best to stay hidden. But she would have said your name many times in a low voice, soothe your nervous eyebrows, step naked across the room to find another quilt for the bed while you learn to appreciate her drawings, to lie still and let her move an open hand lightly over your throat. You shudder and twist hard as if to throw off water or to change the subject. What you've missed gathers around you like a small fog. Then your muddy muzzle tilts up and you go along sideways and southbound. The next poem is called Chamber Music. The bear has clumsy paws and he struggles to open the program. He's delighted to learn that tonight's concert will include Beethoven's 10th string quartet, the harp that he loves so. Sitting in the crowd of well-dressed and mostly older people, he is conscious of his musky odor, of the leaf litter caught in his coat. He's miraculously seated next to a lovely young woman. He's smitten with her and with the music they're hearing together. His eyes close halfway into the evening, and his heart is happy. For an encore, the second violinist introduces a piece she wrote for her young daughter. It is harsh, atonal, and abrupt. The woman next to him asks if he likes it. "No, not much," he says. "I have a daughter, and that music did not make me think of her at all." Of course, he has no contact with any of his offspring, but still he does wonder, would my daughter have any children of her own? He imagines her quietly walking alongside a creek, her cub waddling beside her. How do they manage this cold winter? The second encore is a sweet solo, a slow Irish ballad. After the audience applause, the bear smiles and tells the woman, "Now that reminds me of my daughter." They get up to leave. He hopes she will invite him for coffee or even a glass of wine, as he would never even consider asking a young woman for such a thing. But that does not happen, and he watches her long black hair disappear into the crowd. He goes out a side door, cuts across the deserted grounds and into the woods. He finds his bed of leaves and branches and tamps it down for the night, all the while remembering that longing begins in its own organ, one vital as the kidneys or lungs, and that it thrums on as thoughtlessly as they do, that it demands no more than steady blood and oxygen. And when it suddenly awakes, it warms the entire body. And then he draws himself into a circle, covers his face with his paws, and dreams of a daughter, of dark-haired women, rivers and blood all flowing, the many souls that he loves and knows absolutely nothing of. Next, I will read Hoof Deep in Talbot's Creek. Hoof Deep in Talbot's Creek, Yuhari National Forest, North Carolina, August 2021. The oldest mountains in North America, and today they look their age, wind-worn root and rock. Creeks weak and petered out now that it's late summer. Mud at the Robin's Branch crossing shows that others are searching for water, skunk and squirrel tracks, then horseshoes, oddly enough. There is water finally in Talbot's Creek. I spot him hoof deep in the shade, tacked up and well cared for at the mane and tail. He extends his neck to chew the crazy grass at the shore. I hang a hammock downstream, wait to see who claims him. After 4 hours, nobody has. He is leglock and snores. Water weaves around his feet. I unbuckle the saddle, pull the bridle out of his teeth, flag tape a note to the cantle. Been here since Saturday. It seems I should spend the night. This may be his first outside a fence, but stars and a cool dark breeze, bats that hunt in the canopy will assemble to keep him company. Though, of course, I wonder what he will do should someone willing to deny him even that arrive and lead him out of the creek. The next poem is Problem Bears. Problem Bears. The summer cabin people call me about bears toppling garbage bins, cubs splashing in their hot tubs. My job is to use the dart gun, then tuck each animal into the too small cage for a ride deep into the safer mountains. While the bears quickly forget their ordeals and return to the same spots, such events seem to stay with the tourist. How magical it is to see a bear, they exclaim. For instance, the young girl who crawled into the rhododendron to escape her quarreling parents. The small bear hiding in there, too, made no move to frighten her, though he did say his usual grunts and huffs when the adults found them together. This was so long ago, but I expect she has returned to the same cabin by now. With no family, as family is heartache, patient on the porch until the day that her bear pushes through the rhododendron. The sweet flowers shed the night water. She welcomes him up and reads to him while, like it does every afternoon in the Blue Ridge, it rains for a calm hour. As his eyes close, she looks out over the mountain and wonders again, what is wrong with her that she hoards her oneness so? Wonders how it came to be that a bear, a black bear, also alone and of a certain age, sleeps at her feet. Next, I'll read Frostbite. Frostbite. The steel can in the shed, meant to hold bird seed, has been empty for years, but when rolled on its edge, made the dragging sound of fingernails across the bottom. Beneath the lid, 9 possum joey skulls, each the size of my thumbprint, a scatter of another unidentifiable bones, small as those as you would find in a baby's ear, too brittle and delicate to bury. I dropped them in a glass jar set beside a fawn's jaw. Perhaps we hoard bones because they alert us to the idea of flesh, the way a cold day will wake one's frostbite, lead him to recall a drifted-over path out of the woods, upwind hand already gone hard and white, skin under the nails the same blue as the sky that day. Seated near the wood stove, I could finally flex my fingers, feel the cells inside begin to thaw, to thrum and surge like a nest of blind animals. The next poem is Train of Thought with Whippoorwills. Train of Thought with Whippoorwills. We commandeered a house, November my senior year, half-finished and abandoned, filled it with thrift store sofas, lazy boys and love seats, took care of it like our own, through huge parties all winter that I observed from a hammock strung between 2 porch posts beneath a quilt with a girl I had known since we were in kindergarten together. That house had rafters mitered the same way as the ones in this Adirondack Trail shelter, built by Boy Scouts at Sleep 6, though it is all mine tonight, vault toilet out back, and a metal bear box, short Milky Way walk to the creek. From the floor, I shine a flashlight up to see what rodents scurry near the roof peak. Their eyes glow like the red-tailed monkeys that lived in the grass roof of my Uganda forest hut that jumped onto my cot at all hours in search of apples and oranges I'd hidden under the top sheet. Trick of Light. Is it a trick of light? Excuse me, is the next poem. The pigment in the blue jay feathers is melanin, which is brown. The blue color is caused by scattering